Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of Real Life or Real Life. Thank you very much to Rick Mitkowitz for organizing it and chair it as part of the Adult Education Committee at the Buy It. So I'm very happy that I have an opportunity to present my movie. So we'll be learning a little bit about the Minority Report and how it relates to determinism. So before we watch any actual clip, I figure we should give like at least a basic definition, like the basics of the basics. For what we're going to be doing tonight. So we're going to be watching a clip of the Minority Report, and just bear the following questions in mind while you watch. One, what is determinism? Does it matter if we have free will or not? Do we even have free will? And so those are the main ideas of like how that float in your head. And then just for the definition, so what is determinism? So the word's kind of big, so I figure we should use the definition from Encyclopedia Britannica. Determinism entails a situation in which a person makes a certain decision or performs a certain action. It's impossible that he or she could have made any other decision or performed any other act. In other words, it is never true that people could have decided or acted otherwise than they actually did. So do people actually have free will? And to that, I would like to continue by playing the following clip from Minority Report. Everybody can see it in person and online as well. And here we go. It's a little bit of a long clip, but it's well worth it. And I'm going to shut the lights off.
Any contractions?
Only the ones you give me.
Okay, Jed, what's coming?
Red ball, double homicide, one male, one female. Killers male, white, 40s. Agatha nailed the time frame at 8:04 a.m. The twins are a little fuzzy on that, so we'll need confirmation. Location still uncertain. Remote witnesses are plugged in. This will be case number 1108.
Morning, detectives.
Case number 1108, pre-visualized by the precogs, recorded on Holosphere by Precrimes QStax. My fellow witnesses for case number 1108 are Dr. Catherine James and Chief Justice Frank Pollard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Will the witness preview and validate number 1108 at this time?
Affirmative, I will validate.
Go get him.
Stand by.
Time of murder, 8:04 a.m. That is 24 minutes, 13 seconds from now. This is a red one.
Where are you? 87 years ago.
He looked familiar.
Who?
A man standing in the park across the street. Seen him before.
How can you even tell? You know how blind you are without your glasses. Where are your glasses?
I must have left them up in the bedroom.
You are running out of time.
You know how blind I am.
I show 8 Howard Marks in the district, sorting by race and age.
Under license registration. See if I can capture that.
Running out of time.
You know, I was thinking maybe I'd play hooky, stay home today.
Right.
Working too much.
Can you grab that?
It's unclear.
I got 6 licenses. Where do you want them?
Over here, please.
Foxhall, 4421 Gainsborough.
Send a DCPD blue and white. Set up a perimeter and tell them we're en route.
You know, I was thinking maybe I'd play hooky. Stay home today.
We have come to dedicate a portion of that field.
What do you think?
As a final resting place. What about your meeting?
I'll reschedule. I've been working too much anyway.
It's altogether fitting and proper. We should do this.
But in a larger sense.
We'd have lunch together.
I would love to.
The brave men, living and dead.
I have an open house here at the wrestler place.
Have consecrated far above our poor power to add or detract.
Well, I guess that's why you look so nice.
No longer remember what we say.
Chief! We got a problem with our location.
It's no longer there.
Time frame?
13 minutes.
Hey, Chief. Investigator from the feds here.
Yeah, I don't need some twink from the fed poking around right now.
John, I wrote it down on your calendar. I left you a message at your house.
Check in with the papers ahead of forwarded. See if the neighbors knew where they went. Check all relations.
Checking neighbors and relations.
But John.
Fletch, just get him some coffee. Tell him some stories how I save your ass every day and you can't live without me.
I got coffee. Thank you. Danny Whitworth. Twink from the fed. Whoops. Got him.
Sorry, Danny, I'm gonna have to give you the full tour some other time.
The Marks has moved a couple of weeks ago. Nobody knows where, still searching for family and employer.
Time horizon, 12 minutes.
All right, what he's doing now, we call scrubbing the image, looking for clues as to where the murder's gonna happen.
Original running bond brick pattern, streamline early Georgian details. The brick has been repointed.
And that this nation,
under God,
shall not perish from the earth.
Victims are pronounced here, killers here. Beyond that, the date of the crime, all we have to run on are the images that they produce.
Show a cop on horseback.
Near the Capitol?
No maglev system.
Come on.
Georgetown.
The precogs can see a murder 4 days out. Why the late call?
Well, we call it a red ball. With crimes of passion, there's no premeditation, so they show up late. Most of our scrambles are flash events like this one. We rarely see anything with premeditation anymore.
People have gotten the message.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is good. I show a match with Dwight Kingsley, 18th century architect. He did 24 houses in D.C.
Time horizon, 10 minutes.
10 minutes! Oh.
Look at this kid. And this one is on the left side of the man in the suit.
Yes? So?
This one is on the right. Merry-go-round. It's a park.
Tell me there's only 16 of these old merry-go-rounds left in the city. 2 in Georgetown, 1 in Barnaby Woods, the other's in Woodley.
Woodley's all Victorian, it's gotta be Barnaby Woods. Vaughn, flight time?
Wait, I drive 3 minutes after wheels up.
Horizon 6 minutes.
Shut up, Ivana.
Jed? Jed?
Go ahead.
Did he close the front door?
What?
Did Marks close the front door?
Negative. The front door is open. The front door is open.
Time horizon 30 seconds.
I forgot my glasses.
Oh! You know how blind I am without them.
Positive for Howard Marks. Mr. Marks, by mandate of the District of Columbia Pre-Crime Division, I'm placing you under arrest for the future murder of Sarah Marks and Donald Dubin that was to take place today, April 22nd, at 0800 hours and 4 minutes.
No, I didn't do anything. Sarah!
Give the man his hat.
Oh, God. Don't put that halo on me! Sarah!
Put your hand on your head.
Help me! No, I wasn't going to do anything!
Officer Scott, look at the Pre-Crime Trauma Response Unit. You just sit here a minute and listen to me. Your husband is being arrested by officers from Pre-Crime.
Oh, God, Howard, no. Howard, don't cry. Oh, don't cry. Oh, God.
So they stopped the murder.
Well, that's just an echo. Pre-cog deja vu, if you will. The really bad ones, the precog see them over and over again. Wally, erase the incoming.
When the precogs declare a victim and a killer, their name is embedded in the grain of wood. Since each piece is unique, the shape and grain is unique. The shape.
Before we play this clip, everybody followed what was going on so far? Right, so basically, they're arresting people before they even commit a crime. question is, how is, so we're going to debate, is it the whether that's ethical or not, and now we're going to discuss, is it really as determined? Well, the movie will, and then we'll get to the actual sources.
When the precogs declare a victim and a killer, their name is embedded in the grain of wood. Since each piece is unique, the shape and grain is unique. The shape and grain is impossible to forge.
I'm sure you all understand the legalistic drawback to pre-crime methodology.
Here we go again.
Look, I'm not with the ACLU on this, Jeff. But let's not kid ourselves. We are arresting individuals who have broken no law.
But they will.
The commission of the crime itself is absolute metaphysics. The precogs see the future, and they're never wrong.
But it's not the future if you stop it. Isn't that a fundamental paradox?
Yes, it is. You're talking about predetermination, which happens all the time. Why'd you catch that?
Because it was going to fall.
You're certain?
Yeah.
But it didn't fall. You caught it. The fact that you prevented it from happening doesn't change the fact that it was going to happen.
You ever get any false positives? Someone intends to kill his boss or his wife, but they never go through with it. How do the precogs tell the difference?
Precogs have to see what you intend to do. Only what you will do.
Then why can't they see rapes? Or assaults or suicides?
Because of the nature of murder. There's nothing more destructive to the metaphysical fabric that binds us than the untimely murder of one human being by another.
Somehow I don't think that was Walt Whitman.
Zyra Cinnamon. She developed precogs, designed the system, and pioneered the interface.
Speaking of interfacing, I'd love to say hello.
To Hinneman.
Okay. Okay, so far we've seen... Okay, so the clip so far we saw people being arrested for crime they hadn't committed, but they will in the future. And the question of, is it just because we have a prediction of it occurring, does this necessarily end up happening? So we'll leave with actually having the movie aside. If you want to watch the whole movie, it is available on a whole slew of streaming devices, as well as from the library. What we're going to focus on this evening is the question of what exactly does it mean to have free will? So before we actually get to any sources, let's discuss some of the pros and cons of free will. So why do we all feel better if free will exists? But this is a discussion, so we feel free to chime in. What does it mean that you have to have free will in your minds? Like, what does it allow to work in Judaism in your lives? Like, what does it allow for?
Responsibility.
Individuality.
Reward
and punishment. Good. Right? All things, right? People be responsible for their actions because it's their actions, which makes work with the whole concept of divine reward and punishment, because if in our context, of the Jewish context, as opposed to being some unnamed precog, and how that works, we'll debate for later. But here we have God. God is all-knowing, so he knows the future. So, but we also need to figure out that we have to have the ability to do the right thing or the wrong thing, or else how can God reward or punish us? Right, so that's the basic baseline. Because if we don't have the ability to choose, then, well, what's the point? So that's why most people believe in free will. But what is the problem with believing in free will? What doesn't work? Like, what parts of Judaism that you can think of wouldn't really work so well because of the concept of free will? Uh-huh. Right? What to do about the Paro story? How could God harden his heart and seemingly remove his free will? So, well, on one hand, that proves that everybody else has free will. But clearly, Paro, for a reason, does not.
I think they say with Ben Sorer Moran, one of the reasons that we kill him at that point is he's going to deteriorate and become a murderer eventually.
Right. So that's the case of the rebellious son, who is at the age of 13, has stolen from his parents, used said money to buy meat and wine. And we are so certain he's going to get involved with a bad crowd and probably become a murderer one day.
It's seen as kindness.
It's seen as a kindness to kill him before he ends up actually committing all sorts of murder. So very analogous to our case that we saw in the clip. So they'll say that never actually happened, and it's just on the books, just to encourage you to properly educate children and realize that if you do it wrong, then it's probably your fault that your kid became a whatever that happened to have been, for better or for worse. But as far as a what theological problems exist within the fact that we have free will? God's prescience, good, right? We assume that God is omnipresent, right? He knows everything. So therefore, right, if God's omniscient and knows everything, then we have to, how can God know what we're going to do if we haven't decided it yet, right? So there's a paradox therein. And then there's also some other elements, such as, you know, if anybody here has ever studied psychology or sociology, where they were sociologists and psychologists like to point out how a lot of what we do is not based on our own free will, but rather based on circumstances that we have to be born into and that determine what we do. So if you say that there's free will, then it's like, well, then those fields of studies are kind of worthless because, well, potentially, yes, but functionally, you know, besides writing your nice papers, you can't necessarily act upon it because you can't. Can you convict somebody because they're statistically likely to maybe do something, perhaps? Not so much. So as far as, just to summarize more or less what we discussed. Okay, so again, there's some things here that we didn't actually mention is the question of the fact that we all perceive ourselves as having ability to choose. And that one we'll have to leave for a little bit later when we actually look at some sources relating to that fact. That's what it means to experience choice. But for now, right, most of us fall into the free will camp because if not, a lot of things fall down. As far as other ones go, generally we make do and we say that we'll see there are some solutions to it. So unless somebody here is a hardcore determinist and believes there's no free will, I'll operate under the assumption we're all starting out here as believers in free will. So as far as reasons to against that, so here's a Gemara and from Talmud Bavli, the Gemara and Rafa. So here we have a statement by Rabbi Hanina stating that everything is in the hands of heaven except for fear of heaven. Kol b'nei shemayim kutz mirat shemayim. Shenemar v'ata Yisrael ma Hashem elokecha shoel mimach ki'im liyira. So here we see that what does God ask of you? Rather to fear him. So based on that pasuk, so Bishnina explains that everything besides your belief in God is actually predetermined, which is, so it's not the most, it's not the hard, most hardcore determinism, but it's pretty high up there, right? This Gemara Brachot, everything's determined. Just the question is, while doing what you're doing, do you have belief in God? Is the only actual question. So based on this statement, it would seem that the Gemara believes there's no such thing as free will. But of course, as many people may have realized, that that's not how we operate. So there must be other opinions besides this Gemara that says the only thing you can do is choose what you believe in God while you do your actions. Besides that, everything else is the same. So the most frequently quoted one is the people quote is the Rambam, Maimonides. So let's take a look at what he has to say. So in the fifth chapter of Hilchot Tshuva, Laws of Repentance, Rambam goes through explaining what exactly it means to have free will, because the concept of repentance, of making good on your previous sins, can only make sense within a framework of ability to change and the fact that there is free will, because without it, it will not work. So first, let's start with the baseline that the Rambam says, which we'll all note is relatively common sense to most of us here. So every man was endowed with a free will. He who desires to bend himself towards the good path and to be just, it is within the power of his hand to reach out for it. And if he desires to bend himself to a bad path and to be wicked, it is within the power of his hand to reach out for it. This is known as in the Torah saying, behold, the man is come one of us, no good or evil. Right? Yodea tovara. Right? So that's what it means when Adam Risha, the first man, sinned, right, and tasted from the tree of good and evil. That's when we finally were able to differentiate between good and bad clearly. So that is saying that, behold, this species man stands alone in the world, and there is no other kind like him. Again, still again, quoting from Rishit again. As regards to the subject being able to his own accord, by reason of thought, to know good and the evil, and to do whatever his inclination indicates with him, none to stay his hand from doing good or evil. And that is what is said, lest he put forth his hand and use of the dignity of life and live forever. Okay, so seemingly here. So again, so what is the interpretation of these verses from the creation story in Genesis? So here we clearly have Rabbi explained it based on those verses. We have free will. We choose what we do for better or for worse. So, right? So this would be pretty easy, right? We have free will at the end. We could end this year here. But the Rambam isn't writing this in a vacuum. He's writing it because here's what in his time period he perceives as being the majority. Okay, so this is in the second halakha. Again, we're going to go through it in English simply in interest of time so we can be able to have more of a discussion. So permit your thought to dwell upon that which the ridiculous fools of other peoples and a majority of asinine individuals among the children of Israel say. So if you're wondering how the Rambam thinks about these people, definitely not a big fan of them. So what do they say? That God decrees at the very embryonic state of every man whether he should be just or wicked. So apparently in the time of the Rambam, right, the 12th century, most people were determinists. They said, God decides you're good or evil, and that's that, the end. But the matter is not so. Every man is capable of being as just as Moses, our master, or as wicked as your Rambam, or of wise or Inkini, merciful or human, miser or philanthropist. And so in all their tendencies, there is none to either force things upon him or decree things against him, either pull him one way or draw him another way, but he alone, of his own free will, with the consent of his mind, bends any path that he may desire to follow. So again, the Rambam is clearly saying that we have free will. And what is the main point of going through all this? So we skip to the bottom of this paragraph. The sitting verse, it is all in our power, for we did all evil of our own free will and our own accord. It is indeed for us to turn in repentance and abandon our wickedness. For our free will is in our hands now, as well as the time we committed the sin, saying, now let us search and try our ways and return to the Lord. So that's quoting from Echa, saying how we always have a chance to amend our ways and actually go on the right path. So clearly, again, for the purpose of reward and punishment, the idea of repentance, it is necessary. Okay, so then Rama gives other examples of where it comes up in terms of Deuteronomy and elsewhere. And also here, note this nice footnote here on the bottom here, that since Maimonides, no authority in Israel disputed this. All right, so that's Rabbi Simon Shimon Glazer writing in the early 20th century, explaining how clearly everybody's agreed to the Rambam ever since, and therefore we all know that Rambam is right and the end, and we can all go wrong. But as you probably can guess based on that setup, that is most definitely not the case. So, but before we get to the other side, let's continue with the question of your degree of free will. So this is based on the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Levi, in the 10th to 11th century. So as regards, so he's differentiating between different types of actions, right? There's some that are free will, some that are not quite as free will. So here we go. So starting from the underline, as regards to arbitrary actions, again, I apologize for the, again, originally written in Arabic, hence why it's in English. If you want a more elucidated translation with a lot of good commentary, please see Rabbi Kropkin's explanation of it, which is really, really good. But here, this is just a shortened version I got off of online, just because we're not going to go that in depth today. So as far as arbitrary actions, they have the roots of the free will of man, where he is in position to exercise it. Free will belongs to the class of the intermediary causes. This is causes which reduce it, chain-like, to the prime cause. So here we have not a full free will, but rather there's, you know, what God's trying to do with the world, and we have a sub-power within that. But this, of course, is not compulsory because the whole thing is potential. The mind wavers between an opinion and its opposite, being permitted to turn where it chooses. The result is praise or blame for the choice, which is not the case in other classes. So there's a certain category of actions which we react to when somebody does something that we get upset at them for. Right? So these are things that, so an accidental natural cause cannot be blamed, although some of them admit possibility. But there's certain things that occur in our lives where we can't simply chalk up chance. Rather, you have to look and say, X person did something. The opposite was possible, right? But one cannot blame a child or a sitting person for harm done because they did nothing. The opposite was possible just the same. They cannot be blamed because they lack judgment. You think that those who deny the potential are not those who do them purposely, or do they acquiesce in being wrapped with their garments, consequently also suffering from cold, just as they would expose themselves to the north wind on a cold day? Or do they believe that the anger about it is but a fallacious exertion intended for no purpose, that man may feel anger about one particular thing or give praise and blame to hatred, etc.? In these cases, free will, as such, has no force and cause because it is a self-reduced compulsion. Man's language then will be as little free as the beating of his pulse, which would be against evident appearances. But see that speaking or being silent is in thy power as long as you are in possession of your reason and not controlled by other causality. So here we see that what is the overarching reality of the way we experience it is that we see others do actions, we react. If we really truly believed, okay, whether or not you can say that God is controlling it behind the scenes, but the reality is the way that people react to things shows that we all must believe in free will and act as such, because if not, then your response to everything would have to be, of course, that's what God said, and that would be your only possible reaction. You can never be upset at anybody, angry at somebody, praise them or thank them, because the only thing that you would have is the state of being without a state of any excitement, because you can't have a reaction because everything is simply arbitrary. So Kuthar is proving from your experiences that cannot be the case. There's a similar idea expressed again by Rav Sajagon, again, who's a little bit earlier than Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He was in the 9th century, explaining how, yeah, we perceive and live the actions and feel that we have free choice, and therefore we have free choice. There's as far as more on that. Sajjo wrote a work called Munat Vidayot, the first philosophical work written that has survived, like that's fully explaining Jewish theology. If you want to read it, it's in English. I believe that there is a copy in the library. It's the whole 8th chapter. He goes in depth into that, but the short answer of his conclusion is that yes, God does determine, God has a hand in history, but we all experience free choice, therefore we have free choice. That's his basic proof. The longer version of that, please go to the translation. It's also similar to the Kuzer. There'll be another source. There'll be a lot of sources today that are originally Judeo-Arabic. So those will all be in English. So the next source is similarly in Judeo-Arabic, originally Judeo-Arabic, that of the Chavot HaLevavot of Rabbeinu Bachaya. You may have heard it if you've been hearing Rabbi Kropotkin's different Torah between the Chamar, he's been discussing it. Here is on the question of service in the third section of his Chavot HaLevavot, talks about what it means to be the service of God. So he also mentions the roughly contemporaneous with the Rambam. So we'll read a little bit of the English in terms of as you probably have seen so far and probably guess, he also falls into the overall camp of the Rambam and of everybody else who believe that there is free will. So controversies have long raged among the learned as the modes of reconciling the issue between necessity and righteousness. Question of divine decree versus free will, right? God being all-knowing versus our ability to choose therein. Some say that all human activities proceed according to man's will, capacity, and strength, and that God has left the conduct of these affairs in a man's own hand and given him control over them. Since the divine glory does not interfere in these, therefore a being is liable to reward and punishment for them. So that would be our standard grouping, right? God does, right? God gives us the ability to choose. We have free will. Therefore, we have free will, and things work well. Others describe all human actions like everything else to the Creator, blessed be He, and say that every movement in the universe, from that of rational beings to have an inorganic body, is in the control of the Creator, takes place by His decree and compulsion, and which cannot be varied by as much as a hair's breadth, neither more or less. Okay, so again, those are the two camps we have. So again, we have yet to see an actual rabbi take the position of there is no free will, but don't worry, once we get and more into the modern era, we will see somebody who actually ends up taking that stance. So we have there is free will and there's no free will. What's the problem that comes up when there is no free will? So when against this view, the justice of meaning the main critique leveled against up against that is that the justice of reward and punishment is questioned. They replied, I mean the determinists, we have no knowledge of the subject of reward and punishment. We do not know its form or the way it is enforced. God, however, is righteous and will not do any iniquity. He is faithful in awarding recompense and distribution as he appointed them and will not depart from his rules. Our minds are too feeble to grasp the infinite wisdom. His righteousness is too apparent, his loving kindness too evident, that we should cast suspicion upon his decision, and there is no God besides him. So the standard response is that God makes a determination, and we don't fully understand what's good or bad, or if what we did was good or bad, or whether something is a reward or a punishment we can never truly grasp. Therefore, yes, there definitely is reward and punishment. God is definitely doing it, but because we have no idea, we can't question, and therefore we simply have to have faith, and that's the end of it. That is the, right, so that is one response. But some find it impossible to accept both principles, the idea of divine decree and free will, necessity and righteousness. They say that one who goes deeply into these subjects will not escape sin and will stumble in whichever way he apprehends them. So there's also many who say, stay away from philosophy as far as you can, because when you learn it, your only option is to go down the wrong way, you'll misunderstand it, and sin as a result of it, no matter which stance you took. They therefore assert that the proper course is to follow is to act the principle that one who believes the actions are left to human beings' free will therefore be rewarded or punished for them, and that we should strive for all that is available to avail us with the Creator in both worlds. At the same time, we have to trust in God with the trust of one fully convinced that all things and movements together with their advantageous and injurious results happen by the decree of the Eternal under his authority and according to his sentence, that God has a victorious claim upon us while we have no claim against him. Right, so we start off with there's two polar opposites, that of either you believe in free will or you believe that God controls everything. And then we pointed out why each of those is problematic. And here we see the main reason why it's problematic is because if you rely purely on one, you'll either lose faith in God or you'll end up committing sins and simply saying, God made me do it. So instead, Rabbi Mathaya is offering a middle ground. He's saying that really you should believe in both at the same time. So functionally, you're going to end up acting according to the fact that you have free will, but also at the same time, bearing in mind that really God is behind the scenes wherever it's occurring, and therefore you have to have whichever way will encourage you into the best mode of action based on these two ideas. Of all the views that we have mentioned, this is the nearest approach to the way of salvation. For honestly and in truth, we must confess our ignorance on this topic, which refers to the wisdom of the Creator, because our knowledge is too weak and our comprehension too limited. This ignorance is one of the various forms of divine beneficence. It is for our good that knowledge is hidden from us. If there had been any advantage to us understanding this mystery, then the Creator would have revealed it to us. So Rabbi Balka's conclusion is you have to have both in mind and operate with both with the idea that God is behind them, at both at the same time controlling us. At the same time, we have a full ability to choose. But this way we take the positive impetus from both schools, that of God being in control of everything, as well as our being in full control to determine the best outcome. And by relying on both of these, it'll encourage us to be on the right path. And as far as the exact calculus and how that works out, we have no idea, and that's fine. Because to try and actually comprehend God is impossible. And to pretend that we can actually fully understand God is absurd, and therefore it'll all work out, assuming we do our best, and also remember that God is behind it all at the same time. So for many people, this may give you a sense of dissonance, but that is the way that Rabbeinu Bachya explains as the way to go. But you may have guessed, so that is the not giving up on either, but at the same time, intellectually, it might seem like a contradiction. But functionally, that is the preferred way. But we have another opinion. So this is how I mentioned that we're going to have a controversial opinion. So here it is. So this is the opinion of the Ishbitzer, Rabbi Mordechai ben Yosef of Ishbitza. So in his commentary, the Meshi Law, so he says as follows. So this is on the question of when Sarah denied the reality and after God had accused her of laughing when he about hearing the news that she would have a child. So Sarah says, I didn't laugh. So the question is, so what is going on here? Right? So clearly it seems like Sarah may have sinned and admitting the wrongdoing. But we'll see here that the Meshiloach explains it very differently than you'd expect. He says that this is actually a great depth in this matter. the saying in Brachot that we mentioned to start off, the goodness said all is the end of heaven except for the fear of heaven, applies only to the extent of understanding of the mortal intellect. Truly, everything is in the hand of heaven, including the fear of heaven. Yet God hid his way, his consciousness in the world. The tribute of Yitzchak Avinu was to recognize that even the fear of God of heaven comes from God. Yet the world was not worthy of a consciousness as precious as this. Therefore, Sarah found it necessary to say, "My Lord is old, too old to father children." Here it seems as if she is denying that all is in the hands of heaven. According to the Holy One, blessed be He, showed her measure for measure that even fear of heaven comes from Him, and were it not for the concealment of this understanding from her and the world, Yitzchak could not have been born into the world. For the preciousness of the tribute of Yitzchak was to clarify and to show that even the fear of heaven comes from God, and even all the transgressions of Israel occurred under the watch of God's providence. By means of this, God's great name is exalted and sanctified. Understand this, for it is exceedingly deep. So in case that was a little confusing, I'll summarize. The reason why Sarah thought it was impossible for her to have a child at her advanced age and with Abram's advanced age and her laughing wasn't because of her doubt in God's ability, physical ability to change the laws of the world. Rather, her issue was in the belief in whether or not it's possible that God actually controls everything, even our ability to fear God. Her response was her lack of believing in what the Ishbitz are considered, right, Rabbi Mordechai Yosef of Ishbitz considers to be fact, that Yitzchak Avinu is the highest of all of our forefathers, and he believed that truly everything, no matter what, is from God. Even your fear, your ability to fear God, you have absolutely no choice in that matter. Really, it's all from God. Well, the question is, and normally God hides that ability and understanding from us. And that's what Sarah was questioning. Yet the true reality is that we have no free will. Really, everything is from God. Right? Even free will. Exactly as it sounds, even though Rechina says otherwise, it says even the fear of God is determined in heaven, which is basically the exact opposite we saw from the Rambam and everybody else. That this is saying that even the smallest minutia, no matter what it is really all controlled by God. And it's up to us to figure out how that's possible. So this, as I'm sure many people are realizing, that sounds a little crazy.
I've heard people talk about trying to justify Yehuda's actions with Tamar, saying that he was given an irresistible urge because God wanted to lead to the procreation so he would get David HaMelech, and that he had no real control of his urges. It was set into action that way.
Correct, right? So by utilizing this logic of really it's all from God, is you can basically justify anything and everything because God said it's okay, right? Clearly, if I'm doing it, it's because I don't have control. If I had control, then I wouldn't do it, and therefore, and that's that. So in case you're wondering, maybe this is just a misinterpretation of his opinion. So he also says the same thing in regards to Korach as well.
Wait a second. Question?
You had a question, yes.
So my question is, If that's the case, then how could there be any punishment? Like, how could there be punishment? If it's predetermined that you're going to do this and you have no control of what you're going to do, then how is there a punishment? How could, when you said Korach, how's ground swallowing him up? After all, it was his, let's say, lot in life to do all of this.
Right. So that is the problem, that it allows for basically, if you actually fully take this to this extreme, it means that you can uproot the entirety of reward and punishment and say that you're blameless, which appears to be the case, what Korach does as well. And that's also how Mr. explains the story of Korach, why he's really free of sin. So everybody basically gangs up and beats down on the Meshulach because it flies in the face of reward and punishment, which is... so. People may have heard of the 13 fundamental principles of the Rambam. So there's shorter versions of it. People say that that's too many. Some of those are debated. But there's a book called Sefer Karim by Rav Elbow from the 14th century, where he's called Sefer Karim, the book of primary principles, where he explains that actually there's really only three: reward and punishment, that God exists, and that God gave us the Torah. And the rest, we can quibble how exactly did they happen. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. How exactly did it happen? But those you can't mess with. If you mess with them, then everything else falls apart. And here it seems like one of those big three is basically been knocked out entirely. And so I'm not going to spend a large amount of time explaining that opinion because I honestly don't understand it. But the overall and his recommendation is we must preserve the illusion of free will so that everybody else will not, the world will go to the dogs. But really, it's all in the hands of God. And we don't actually have a choice. The question is, are we able to come to that realization? And that is the ultimate reality of philosophy.
Well, I think this is like the Yiddish saying, der Mensch tracht und Gott lacht. Man plans and God laughs.
Correct. So there's also the question of on large scale versus small scale, which we will not have time to get to today. But there's also the question that God's hand is to what extent within the determinist view or the not determinist view, when does God intervene and how and to what extent? And that is a good question, but that is beyond the scope of today's lecture. If you want to hear more about that, I recommend you go look up Rav Asaf Ben Narsh on YU Torah, where he has a whole series discussing precisely that. But we're not going to have time to go through all of that. So let's try and see how much we can get through. We have around 10 minutes remaining. So as far as the question of, we mentioned before within Rebbeinu Bechaye, as well as also mentioned in the Rambam and Hilchot Teshuvah, we didn't read it inside due to lack of time, the question of, at the end of the day, why is it okay? Because basically human beings cannot fully understand God's actions, and therefore reward and punishment's a little hazy, and you got to do your best because we'll never fully understand. So the Ravid, right, Avram ben David, really does not like this. And he explains as follows, that he is upset at the Rambam for even mentioning the fact we can't understand God and open the can of worms that is reward and punishment if it doesn't necessarily work out, because this one did not know the custom of all the custom of scholars. For no man begins a thing which he knows not how to finish it. Whereas he commenced with inquiries and questions and left the matter under question and turned it around to faith. He said the conclusion that the Rambam came to is basically believe in God and it'll be okay. Similar we had by, as Rabbi Bechaye had a similar thing as well, that at the end of the day, you just need to believe and operate on that belief, even if it doesn't really make sense, which for most people who like rational conclusions are very bothered by that possibility of not actually closing the can of worms. So it would have been better not to leave the matter to the innocence of the innocent, not to weaken their hearts and leave their mind out, lest during some hour a suspicion of their heart concerning it. Moreover, although there is no convincing reply to this question, it is best to lean himself on a partial answer like this, saying, if either the righteous or wickedness of man would have been dependent upon the decree of the Creator, may he be blessed, we would be saying that his knowledge is his decree. Then would the question have been very difficult indeed. But now since the Creator ceded the power from his hand to the hand of man himself, his knowledge cannot be said to be a decree, but it's similar to the knowledge of an astrologist who knows by another power that the conduct of a certain man would be. And it is common knowledge that from the smallest to the biggest thing which happens to man, the Creator transmitted the power of the planets. Only he, meaning God, endowed him with intelligence to sustain himself and be delivered from the influence of the planet. And this very same is the power endowed to man to be either good or bad. And only the Creator knows the power of the planet and its movements, whether it be within the power of the intelligence of one to be delivered from his influence or not. And as such, knowledge is not decree, but even this is not a comparison. So the Rabbi doesn't fully answer the question either, but his point is that God gave us the ability to have free will, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day. That God broke us from the predetermined wheel of cause and effect and gave us what this thing called free choice, and that is what allows us to have free choice. So, and the Rambam as well says similarly elsewhere, just he didn't properly close the box in. We're mentioned there. Right? So God recognizes his own truth and knows it really is. He does not know with an intelligence which is apart from himself, as we know. For we, our intelligence are not one. The Creator may be blessed in his intelligence and his life or one from the very lateral anger manner of unity. So in short, God is beyond everything. Therefore, we might not be able to conceive how God could give us free will, yet it works. The answer is, but for God, it works because God is God. Since but for this, he would live a life, understand, and with an intelligence apart from himself, therefore be many gods. Okay, so we'll skip that. Basically, God in here. Therefore, because he knows his own self, he knows all, for all depend upon him and being. So since God is God and God is in control of everything, so yes, God allows us to operate, but by means of the fact that God is beyond our logic and reasoning system, therefore that's why it'll still work. That's how the Rambam solves it. Again, relatively similar to the way the Rambam did, but he simply didn't give that nice answer at the end of Hilchot Teshuva, and not giving us a full example of free will, of reward and punishment, which is what made the Ravid angry. And as far as other things in that regard, so, and then, but the Rambam's main work on this isn't actually in the Mishnah Torah, rather, it's in his philosophical work, the Morat Avilchim, the Guide of the Perplexed, where Rambam goes through philosophical questions that he has and works them out, trying to help out himself as well as others in the process. So here, let's get to the, what was the line that I wanted? Here, so part of the point here is, here, anything predicated of God is totally different from our attributes. No definition can comprehend both. Therefore, his existence is that of any other being totally different from each other, and the term existence is applied to both ominously, and as I shall explain. This is why I say for the guidance of children and ordinary persons, you must believe there is a being existing perfect and corporeal, not inherent in the body, the force of it, God, who is above all kinds of efficiency and above affections. But the question concerning the attributes of God and their invisibility and the meaning of those attributes which describe to him concerning creation, his providence, and providing for everything concerning his will, perception, his knowledge, everything, prophecy in its various degrees, concerning many of his names, the unity and more problems. All these things are very difficult problems. The true secrets of the law, the secrets mentioned so frequently in the books of the prophets and in the words of our teachers, the subjects of which we should only mention in the headlines of the chapters we've already stated, and only the presence of a person satisfying all above-named conditions. So the problem here basically is explaining that you really shouldn't be learning philosophy. You have to know everything, be very firmly rooted in it, because when you venture into philosophy incorrectly, you will wind up often making mistakes, as again pointed out by Rabbi Bachai as well, that a lot of the times people make mistakes based on their limited understanding, and also again as the Ravid says as well. Again, very dangerous to actually be learning philosophy. But here we are. So we'll clear this. So if you want on that, please about the Morat Avilchim. Again, Rabbi Kropkin has a weekly share on Morat Avilchim. If you want more on that, again, beyond our time here. So, but as far as the question of repentance, so let's continue on in the Rambam, where he says that here. The question was raised earlier about Paro and the Egyptians and how they're punished, right? And they seemingly lost their ability for free will. So the answer is that it's not that they're punished because of their actions. So certain things may have been predetermined, and if they had truly done things entirely without any desire, they would have been a lot of stuff free, but they did not do that, and therefore they ended up getting punished as a result, because they also had the desire that wound up with that. Because sometimes you could inadvertently, you happen to, by way of chance, be the cause, but if you're actually the one who's doing it, then that becomes, you're going to be punished for that as well. Okay? Rome doesn't like this either, and says that's more confusing, and also says that the explanation that Rome gave as far as your desire affecting things flies in the face of reward and punishment. And this says, therefore, Rome, why are you talking about this? Please stop. You're just confusing people and making things worse. So, and he says again, So he says that the idea that your intent doesn't matter. It's whether you sin or don't sin. Don't try and say anything else, because otherwise you're going to end up making everybody sick. Thank you, Rambam. So, but I would like to focus more on two modern day approaches there's something that we do have free will. We have ability to choose, and God also knows. So the question is, so what does that mean? And what is our degree of latitude? Right, to nature versus nurture, as well as between the concept of how is God above everything. So one thing to note is the idea of Eliyahu Dessler in Miftah Eliyahu, where he explains that there is this is a summary due to, we have about 2 minutes left. So that there is a Bechira for certain things, and but not for others, right? There's conquered territory versus territory still dispute, talking about things based on the psychological realm. So when time something becomes what you normally do and becomes second nature, it has left the realm of free choice and becomes something else. But it all depends on what question we're talking about. So every day when you choose your action, you have a partial choice in that regard. And on the long run, it becomes full choice. But if you were to actually ask, did I choose, you know, my next action? A lot of times you conditioned yourself. So yes, at that time, you may not have had a choice. But overall, looking back on your whole life of actions, you did make the choice. Just every individual action might have been not necessarily, you know, I decided I was going to move my right foot. It did happen. So Rav Soloveitchik has a similar idea. He explains that people typically act in predictable ways, right? It's the field of psychology, sociology, etc. By default, we act without free will. But you can use your ability to and desire to act unpredictably if you so wish. You can act against your personality once, or you can reshape your personality. You start with a base, but you can change it at will. On no front does it start. At any point, you can always rewrite your personality. You can transfer your fate at will with your free will and override psychology if you want. In other words, the basic job of a Jew is to act against the nature and to create himself with his own free choice. So if you want to see that in the Rav's words himself, he has it in called Obliga Fake. I rewrote it because he said that's what the content of what we got from Har Sinai is that God gave us that unique ability, the ability to actually choose and determine our fate, not be tied down anymore. So that means that even, yes, there is nature, there is nurture, but we have the ability to always supplant that. Right? There always is a chance, right? Overall, God does determine the fate of the nations, but what God gave us when he gave us the Torah, as well as what God gave us in general, is the ability to divert from that path, and we actually do have free will and the ability to choose. We have, as the nations of chosen people, are the benefit of that, and that's why we are the Jewish people. So now just to wrap up, and now that I opened a little can of worms, let me pretend that I closed them all. If I didn't, feel free to ask me more afterwards. So let's summarize. So the question is, how do we realize we have free will, assuming that we do? So there's two basic proofs, mainly that of the experiential proof of, well, we all act on it, therefore we have it, as well as the question, the reality of we react strongly to things, and therefore, unless we want to trivialize every action that occurs, we must therefore or at least functionally act as we have free will. That's the Kuzari. Question of, wait, but doesn't God know everything and all powerful and choose everything so happen at work? So to that, we have the Rambam who said, well, God said so, therefore we do. And then the Rambam is like, but that's confusing. Why are you telling people something that's confusing? But that's simply the answer. God said so, therefore it works. And don't worry too much about the metaphysical details because you'll never get it anyways. That opinion is also by Rabbi Bechaya as well as many others. Conversely, we have the Meshulah who said that, no, you don't have free will, pretend, because we don't want the Jew to be up. And the Jews like having all, like, you know, enjoying the free ride that we have. So just sit back and relax and enjoy. That was this concern, which of course, none of us, well, it's very untenable to actually operate off of, as was pointed out. So then the question of how do we deal with that with the confluence of the two things? So the easiest solution is you can either fully ignore free will or ignore the fact that God knows the future. So by ignoring one or the other at a given time, you can operate just fine. Right? That was Rabbeinu Bechaya's initial assumption, like the two groups were separate. So then we mentioned how, so there's a bunch, here's some people who say that, again, we didn't have time to go through them, but the question of, you know, does God really have all-knowing power or not? And the answer sometimes is simply no. Or you can explain that God is outside of time, therefore it doesn't make sense because the calculus is broken. Again, denying that part working. Or we can say that, again, within the broken model, if we don't understand how things work, that's the Rambam of we'll never fully get it, so don't worry about it. So basically for a person, you can't work that way, but for God, it works. And that also tied into the Rabbeinu Bechaya, who said that you would operate off of both of them, and you use it optimally. So for us, and you're like, wait, that makes no sense, it's confusing. Yes, it is. But for God, it makes sense, and therefore do your best, because trying to fully grasp it, well, you're not going to get there. So just do your best. Okay, and then we mentioned that the question of God being beyond time. So that can sort of side go into that more in his treatise on Amunot Deyot, right? On his treatise of faith. So where he goes and explains how God is beyond time, therefore it to us looks like it makes no sense, but because God is beyond our understanding and beyond time, therefore it works. What does that mean? Please get a degree in doctor of philosophy, because I don't actually think it's either, but thank you for Sajigo. Okay, and then the last point they mentioned, namely that of nature and nurture versus free will and how that works. So we saw both in Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Dessler, again, two modern thinkers in the last century, explaining how, yes, you have a predisposition, yes, you do have certain inclinations, but none of those things are actually hard and set. If, as any actual therapist, psychologist, sociologist, etc., will tell you, yes, you have a predetermination, but that doesn't guarantee you're going to do it. If you think that, then that's patently absurd. No judge will let you get off of something because of like, oh, you know, I'm slightly more inclined towards it. Like, okay, so, and then they'll put you promptly in jail because that's not a valid defense. So the reality is that, yes, we do have free will. We have ability to choose. We have, again, sometimes we feel it more than others, but at the end of the day, we have free will. And the question is, will we use it properly or not?